classic midsummer trade. There was no gap and go on the charts. It was close in beans and cattle and, frankly, even in hogs. But what makes it really feel like midsummer market is every comment from analysts is starting with the importance of weather for the week, which is a big change from exactly 1 week ago.
Live from the home of the brave, via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a conversation with Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete. Then it's on to Randy Russell from the Russell Group. And right after the news, Michael Clark from BAM WX checks in. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis. Yes, thank you so much. How was the weekend? Everything good?
Super fantastic, brother. Good. Super fantastic. I narrowly avoided a nasty case of heat stroke, but got a lot accomplished, a lot of yard farming. There was a fair amount of patriotism and gunpowder involved. And nice. God bless America, brother. God bless America.
Nice. Love it. Love it. Yes. I got to spend a little time with some family. I got to spend a little time on the river. Got to spend a lot of time with my wife, just relaxing. It was nice.
Now yes, I hear that that the fishing on the Big Muddy is pretty good this year. Has that been your experience as well?
I'm going to find out next week.
Okay,
I'm going to find out.
Well, I'll look forward to that report.
I'm looking forward to generating that report for you.
Yeah, outstanding. It's science, you know?
So weather matters a whole lot more today than it did 1 week ago. Uh-huh. And every weather firm out there that makes a living off of weather forecasts should be thanking USDA NASS and their acreage report for making it happen for them. We take 5 million acres off corn plantings from the March intentions, and all of a sudden, weather really matters. Really matters. So we'll get an update from Michael Clark, BAMWX.com, here in just a little bit. All right, buddy, what you got in the news?
Well, Chip, tensions between the United States and China have found yet another potential flashpoint as the U.S. Navy has sent two aircraft carrier groups into the disputed South China Sea, raising the ire of Beijing. The USS Ronald Reagan and the USS Nimitz are embarking on military exercises in the hotbed waters as China conducts its own exercises. Rear Admiral James Kirk said from on board the USS Nimitz, quote, "They have seen us and we have seen them." Chinese state media reports Beijing stands ready to counter the challenge posed by the U.S. And if we got to send somebody, man, it's got to be Rear Admiral James Kirk. Really? That's awesome.
I love it. I wonder how he got the demotion, though.
I don't know. Drive the boat. Drive.
Very good. Very good. And we will get an update on China and U.S. and Hong Kong relations from Randy Russell, bottom of the hour.
Oh, good. Well, because meanwhile, President Trump has not yet signed a bill issuing sanctions on certain Chinese officials over Beijing's increasingly hardline stance on control over Hong Kong, but it is believed that other moves are possible. An administration official told reporters on Saturday that the president is considering two or three actions against China, noting something will likely be unveiled soon. This, as a bipartisan group of lawmakers urged administration officials to intervene in human rights abuses in Xinjiang province, saying, quote, the Chinese government has committed horrific acts, including mass internment, family separations, forced labor, and forced renunciations of faith. Quite the deal there.
The way that they are treating the Muslims in that country is just, well, it's inhuman. Something needs to be done. Yeah.
Well, Senate Majority Whip John Thune from South Dakota said last week that talks over the next coronavirus relief stimulus bill are making progress and that a plan will likely come together by the next recess in August. Thune said, quote, there's a lot of work that's been done. It's realistic but challenging for sure. And in the end, if we need to move and we need to act, we will, Chip.
Yeah. Yeah. The next bill it's not going to be the $3.5 billion that has already passed the House. But The Senate's going to take it up. They're going to come up with something that will get a compromise and will get the president's approval. We'll talk to Randy about it.
Well, according to data released by Johns Hopkins, and Chip, we haven't checked in on these numbers in a while, so I thought I'd just mention them this morning. Yeah. COVID-19 has infected 11.3 million people around the world, taking the lives of more than 530,000. The U.S. recorded 45,000 fresh cases on Saturday, bringing the total number of confirmed cases up to 2.8 million, with 129,000 total U.S. fatalities. Chip.
Yeah, stuttering start to some of the economies and some areas, regions of the country in restarting the economic activity. So tough, yeah, we need to get back to normal, but we need to do it smartly.
Right. And finally, around 1,000 workers at a JBS pork processing plant in Brazil have tested positive for COVID-19, according to figures from the Labor Prosecutor's Office. While the company notes most have recovered, the rate of infections highlights the challenges meatpackers in Brazil face in combating the virus. JBS says it enacted its contingency plan after the first case was confirmed, helping to avoid further contamination among its workforce. China has suspended imports from more than 20 meatpacking plants from various countries, including four Brazilian facilities. Chip.
Even though there is zero mm-hmm. evidence that the virus can be transmitted on food product, on food packaging, on any of that, they are still raising it as a barrier. Okay, thank you, Davis. We'll talk to you later, buddy. All right, let's bring in Michael Clark, BAMWX.com. It's The Ridge, Michael. How you doing?
Hey, buddy, I'm good. How are you?
Good, good, good. Is it going to move this week?
You know, it's going to relax and pull west for a couple of days. It will have a decent little pullback this weekend. Before that happens, though, Eastern Corn Belt here, you know, the next couple of days into late week could see 90, 95 plus across portions of Illinois, Indiana, especially northwestern Ohio. In fact, some of the discussion in northwest Ohio, I wouldn't be surprised if there's some local area 100 degree readings this week. But the brief pullback this weekend, and then it comes back stronger next week. So,
okay. So with those temperatures that we've got in the eastern belt this week, is there any relief from the moisture from any rainfall?
There'll be scattered convective-like storms. Seven-day numbers, 10-day numbers aren't great, but you'll have that local isolated heavy storm that somebody gets in on, you know?
Okay. All right. Comes back even stronger next. Well, first, before next week, this weekend, when it pulls back, does that mean some cooler temperatures, maybe a chance for rain in the middle of the country?
Yeah, there'll be a front come through. There will be a chance of rain, especially into the, like, you know, the central portions of, like, western Iowa, eastern Nebraska, the Dakotas. The further north you go, the better shot of rain you're going to have. But it's the pullback will at least allow for some leaf, say upper 80s for high temperatures versus the mid 90s. Comes back, though, we're looking mid, maybe upper 90s, Chip. It's going to be pretty hot.
Gotcha. Michael, thanks, man. We'll talk to you later.
Okay, thanks, Chip.
You bet. That is Michael Clark, BAMWX.com. With a forecast basically as we expected, above normal temperatures and not much chance for rain. We've got Machine Repeat next on AgriTalk. Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields.
Your next piece of equipment is on machinerypeat.com. Search equipment from dealerships across the country to find what you're looking for. Only on machinerypeat.com.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk. Glad that you could join us today. I'm your host, Chip. Got Davis with me.
Hello.
And it is time for our regular weekly conversation with Greg Peterson, No, not the Greg Peterson that you just heard on that commercial spot. This is a different one. This is the guy we talk to every week, Machinery Pete. How you doing, buddy?
Hey, good, Chip. How are you doing today?
Good, good, good. Boy, based on the preview that we did a week ago, I want to get started right away because I know that we've probably got a lot to go through. But let's start it off with the pick of the week. What do you got?
Yeah, pick of the week, we're going combines. We're going to Central Illinois. A week ago today, last Monday, our friend Mike Mosky had a farm auction there in Emden, Illinois, and a really clean 2004 KSH 2388 combine, 2,270 engine hours on it, and it went for $60,000, which to me sounded kind of high, so I did a little research on it, and that's actually the second highest auction price on an 04 model 2388 in 3 years. And okay, for more perspective, now we do have to consider the 2388s, you know, they made them quite a few years, I think like 98 to 06. But yeah, the last 15 04 models, including this one at 60, the average auction price is, it's just under 31.5. So okay, 60,
wow,
pretty strong. But that, it tells you how clean it was. It was really, yeah, sharp. And again, that's the whole nut right now. If it's good shape, clean, dollars are there.
Right, exactly. If I was going to the dealer's lot and looking at, mm-hmm, a 2388, what might I spend on a machine like that?
Well, kind of interesting. I mean, I looked in our machinerypete.com data. Right now, the average auction price on an 04 model 2388 is $61,075. So this, sometimes these older combines, you drift out more than the 8 to 10 year old. Sometimes the difference between the asking price on the lot and the hard cash auction, yeah, the spread gets bigger. And you can see that, yeah, here with the average asking price on the lot, 61,000 and change. And I just mentioned the last 15 we saw sold at auction, hard cash, you know, that was 31.5. So it depends, again, is it a local trade? Is it a one owner? Does it have low hours? Obviously, like the one that brought 60 last Monday, when those are on the lot or at auction, sort of command a premium when they're right.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. The Sullivan auction that we talked about, that we previewed, yeah, last week, that, boy, we said it was going to be a test of the market, and especially for the combine side of things. How did it go?
Well, it was the next day. It was last Tuesday. Sullivan's had the sale for the folks at Sinclair Tractor. I think they've got like 13 on-site locations in southeast Iowa. And so went really well, Chip. Combines, folks maybe saw the little note I posted on social media, but what really grabbed me on the sale was they had all this late model equipment, like 80 pieces, you know, tractors, tillage, but the combines, like you said, were the main thing. They had 20 S680s. I mean, 20.
Right. Right.
I don't think I've ever seen a sale where that many of one late, you know, sort of late model item were sold like that. And to give you an idea how it went, I mean, coming into the sale, the average auction price on an S680 this year was $133,006, which actually was, yeah, up a smidge. Last year it was $130,049. But the 20 they sold last Tuesday averaged $186,675.
Wow.
So they did well. Now, obviously, every machine is different. I did note the other one that caught my eye out of the bunch was the 17 model four-wheel drive with under 500 engine hours on it, went for $288,
okay,
which hard cash, that's pretty good. I mean, that's the highest S680 auction price in 20 months. So we actually have a podcast coming out. I don't know if it's coming out today or tomorrow. It'll post live, but I got Dan Sullivan and Bob Sinclair, owner of Sinclair Tractor, on a video call last week, and we recorded it for our podcast just talking about the sale. And
mm-hmm,
really interesting. I think Dan said they had online bidders from 46 states and six or seven countries. So I was kind of interested in what the four states were that weren't,
yeah,
that weren't online for it. But obviously, huge audience. And you know, absolute sales. So, you know, get in there, compete and buy. And, you know, again, dollars were there.
Well, it certainly feels like the combine's passed the test. That's still a strong market.
Well, again, and I don't know. I've been covering auctions for 30 years, and anytime you try and sell more than like four of anything on one auction,
yeah,
it can be kind of problematic, especially the higher dollar stuff. But 20, you know, and this was online only. But again, it was really very well publicized, and you know, everybody knew about it. And again, here's your shot. You know, timing is, it's a good time. On the podcast, Dan and I got talking about a sale they did, I think it was 5 years ago, out in Western Nebraska. With a custom harvester, and with a similar deal, they sold just a ton of late model stuff. And you think, geez, July, that's kind of a tough time. But actually, you know, you get guys thinking about, well, geez, I might need a new machine, a second combine,
yep,
whatever.
Yep.
Same deal. Prices were strong.
Yep, yep. You know, and the way that harvest has gone the past couple of years, guys are kind of thinking, hey, a second unit is maybe not a bad idea just to get things done a little quicker once you can roll.
So. Yeah, you know, and also on that, like that S680 I mentioned went for $288, which, you know, I'll represent. I mean, hey, that's the highest auction price in 20 months. But, you know, people on the Facebook post were accurately commenting that that thing was advertised for over $400. So,
yeah,
you know, $288, if you need a new machine, you want to trade whatever, $288 is a heck of a lot of money, but it's a lot less than $400K or $500K or
right,
whatever on a newer one. So
right. Right. Okay. The story that you tweeted about yesterday out of South Dakota. Oh, good grief.
It was, I thought you'd maybe run across, I know Tyne Morgan, our friend with U.S. Farm Report, saw it. She actually got it on U.S. Farm Report, and we put together a story. But Nick Sievers, a young fella from Beresford, South Dakota, people maybe saw the Facebook thread. It just went viral a while ago. But Nick ran into hard times the last couple of years, like a lot of farmers. It's been tough.
Yeah.
I don't pretend that it hasn't been. Nick actually had to sell his equipment, get out of farming. And one of the tractors he sold was the first one he ever bought. Sentimental value, a 1970 John Deere 4520, which he didn't have as a collector. I mean, he farmed with it.
Yeah.
And he had it in his wedding picture. And, you know, it was tough. He posted on Facebook and said, my last drive, take this down to the auction site, whatever. And anyway, it sold on an online auction. And Nick's friends, led by Jed, I think it's Obertson, great guy there, they secretly got together, pooled money, and bought it back, unbeknownst to Nick, and drove out and surprised him and gave him the keys. And so Nick talked about what that was like. And it says, you know, there's a lot of tough stuff in the world today. So goodness of people. And I was talking to Jed afterwards on Twitter, and I loved the quote he gave me, Chip. I was just saying, hey, that was awesome what you guys did, Jed. And he didn't want any attention on him or the guys. He's like, hey, you know, Nick's a friend.
Yeah.
But he said, you know, Pete, he said, action happens when ideas lace up their work boots.
Yeah.
So a lot of times I think people think, oh, I should help out. But most times we don't do it. So Jed and his friend, they did it. And they laced up their work boots. They thought of it. They did it. They scraped together. They gave them the keys back. And it was beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Good stuff. Good stuff. What else are you blogging on?
Oh, I had one on July 4th. That was kind of funny. I poke around YouTube a lot, and you find some unreal stuff out there. Just incredible. I was going through this video. It was from NBC News, their actual Sunday night report, July 4th, 1976, Bicentennial Day.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm watching this thing. Oh, this is interesting. And halfway through, they do a report on a farm family from Madison, Minnesota, which is like 45 miles from where I grew up.
Yeah.
And it was sort of a look ahead, like American farm family in 1976, yeah, looking ahead. And it was the Thompson family. They had 800 acres. They had some cows, did this whole report. And it was so jarring, Chip, to see, you know, 44 years ago, the mom and the grandma and the families in the kitchen, and making potatoes, and you know, we had four channels on our TV and no cell phones and no internet, and 800 acres was a big farm, and they focused on an 8-year-old boy who they thought was going to run the farm someday, and I thought, oh, I'll track him down, and actually I found out he just passed last April, so it was kind of a bittersweet story, but it was interesting.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Good stuff, man. Thank you so much, Greg. We'll talk to you again next week, okay?
All right. Have a good week, Chip.
All right. You bet. We've got Randy Russell, the Russell Group, up next.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Brian, we're not seeing crazy trade, but boy, it sure feels like midsummer trade, doesn't it?
Yeah, definitely a weather market, Chip. We kind of, you know, ran, if not sprinted, out of the gates last night, and we backed off that some, kind of just jogging right now. But corn market's still holding on to solid gains, but trading low range for the day. Soybeans are about mid-range. We did have some export news on top of the weather, which is expected to be hot and dry the next 10 days to 2 weeks. But sold a couple, four cargoes of beans to China. Three cargoes of corn to China, and then about three cargoes of corn to Mexico as well. So, you know, like I said, there's some export news underneath this market as well.
Yeah, that's really good. That is encouraging. But, boy, if the weather forecast wasn't hot and dry, we wouldn't even be up the 2-3 cents that we are in corn. It really feels like we're into this weather market. Some real nice trade going on in cattle.
Yeah, it's a continuation of the price strength that we saw last week, especially late in the week there. And we're moved out to strong gains here mid-morning. So, you know, we kind of built the buyer interest as we've gone here. So hopefully we can get a good finish in that market. But it's nice to see some strength in the cattle market after, you know, we had the price weakness and then the sideways action. Now starting to build some strength in there. And that's spilling over to the hog market. Just slight gains right now, but at least we're still trying to fill, you know, that gap after the H&P report. If they get that done, then we'll have more technical momentum.
Excellent. All right. Thank you, Brian. Have a good week. That is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, a farmer-focused podcast important to agriculture. It's brought to you by Pivot BioProven. Visit pivotbio.com to find a representative near you.
And welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone. I'm glad that you can join us today. I'm your host, Chip Flory. It is Monday, the Monday after the 4th of July, and the markets are kind of acting like it here a little bit. So it's midsummer trade. Here we come for the grains and livestock. Let's get ready for the week ahead. We've got Randy Russell, the Russell Group, out in Washington, D.C. with us. Randy, it's good to talk with you again. How are you?
I'm great, Chip, and I hope you and your family had a great 4th of July. Little weird for us here on the East Coast with still kind of slowly getting out of the in the reopening aspect, and didn't have any fireworks. So I hope you had some sanity in the Midwest.
Yes, we did. We did. It was close to normal. It seems like everybody is still kind of keeping their distance, but we did have some fireworks. We had some time on the water. We had time with family and friends. But you know this. The stuttering restart here, Randy, it's a threat, isn't it? Some of the states could be pulling back.
Yeah, I was just down in South Carolina for the 3-day weekend down in the Charleston area, and Charleston is still remarkably open, most of the restaurants, et cetera. It is a very weird sight, though, Chip, to watch somebody walk down a beach with a mask on when there's nobody else quite around them. I do think in the South, you know, in Florida, we're certainly seeing a hot spot, and Georgia to some degree, South Carolina, and along the in Alabama, et cetera, and then also in Arizona and back in Southern California. So I will say this, though. It's very difficult, having started this reopening process, having been shut down for 3.5 months, to take those freedoms away from people again. So I think we're going to have to learn to social distance. We're going to have to wear masks in some cases. But I don't think we're going to see a huge pullback because I don't think people are going to put up with it.
Right, right. What does this mean for conducting business in Congress?
Well, you know, Congress, the Senate is now out until about the 20th of July. They're starting to work behind the scenes on the next COVID package. And I think, Chip, as soon as the Senate gets back around the 20th, you will see a package unveiled to kind of rival the $3.5 trillion package that the House passed. I think the Senate package will be much more in the neighborhood of about $1 trillion, give or take. And it will deal with this unemployment compensation issue. It will deal with liability, and it will deal with some of the fallout on the ag front, obviously, including increasing the Commodity Credit Corporation borrowing authority above the $30 billion level. That'll then set off discussions with the House over a final package, and hopefully they'll get it done before they break for the August recess.
Right. How necessary do you think it is?
Well, that's a very debatable point. You know, you saw the jobs report last week before we broke for the holiday, and most experts, I think the average was about 2.8 or 2.9 million jobs to be added. It ended up being 4.8 million jobs, so it was almost double what they were expecting. And the unemployment rate, I hate to say it, but it's good news that it fell from 13.3 to 11.1. I think the next month or two is going to be very telling. To get to your point, Chip, about the reopenings and are we hitting the pause button? I think when we look at the July and August data, we're going to get a real good sense whether we're kind of moving forward on the reopening path or whether there's been a pullback. What I worry about is the, you know, as part of these loans, potentially grants under the PPP program, the Paycheck Protection Program, that expires the end of July, and I wonder how many of those businesses that kept people on the payroll won't be able to do so, because even with a reopening at 50% capacity, can you cover your fixed costs, and can you really make a go of it? So something to keep your eye on as we get into August and September, what happens with unemployment and the jobless numbers.
Right, right. Okay. Part of what I'm most anxious to see is some support for livestock producers and heck, even the meat processors. Is that going to be taken care of?
So the first round of the COVID aid that USDA announced, that $9.5 billion, the highest recipient so far has been on the livestock side. And there's more to come. I think the next package will have a significant increase, as I mentioned earlier, in the Commodity Credit Corporation borrowing authority. It's right now $30 billion. It's been at that level, Chip, since 1987. Hasn't been increased for inflation since then. Right. I think they'll raise it to at least $50 billion. Okay. And then that'll give Secretary Perdue and the team down there the flexibility to provide additional assistance. And I think livestock will be a recipient of it. I don't think meat packers are going to get checks. I don't think that's happening. I don't see that happening. Now, there are obviously, like on the produce, on the hog side, and to a lesser extent on the poultry side, because of the situation, as you mentioned earlier, with the meat and poultry packing problems we had earlier this year, and they had to euthanize animals. There is talk about putting assistance in for that particular situation, and that should be provided, in my judgment.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. The increase in the CCC funds, John Newton,
yep.
Chief economist at Farm Bureau, I think he was one of the first to put that $68 billion number out there.
Right.
If you're going to index it to inflation, but you don't see much chance that we're going all the way to 68?
I think there's a possibility. By the way, I think John Newton does a terrific job for the Farm Bureau, and I applaud them for the pieces that they put out, that just for an educational perspective. I mean, you know, just to run the normal price support loan, marketing loan, direct payment, countercyclical payments, crop insurance, mandatory conservation funding, you know, to try to manage that without trade mitigation payments, without COVID assistance, CFAP, is an undertaking. And then you throw all that on top of it, And the $30 billion borrowing limit is a thing of the past. I mean, we need, even without these additional costs, Chip, we need to raise the borrowing authority just to manage the day-to-day farm program, crop insurance, conservation program expenditures that go out. So I think it'll be at least 50, and we could get above that, as John talked about, to 68 billion, which would be what it would be if you put the 1987 number of $30 billion and set it according to inflation.
Right, right. Okay. Looking around the world, this week, that might be where the news really comes from. China, Hong Kong, the relationship with the U.S. and everything. What's the status there?
Well, Chip, I think we've been operating kind of on these parallel tracks. And what do I mean by that? One parallel track has been the, you know, the phase one deal, which got off to a slow start because of COVID, number one, and particularly in China. And also the agreement didn't take effect until the middle of February. So we basically lost a quarter of the calendar year. I think we're going to end up, if you take away that quarter, I think we're going to end up with about three quarters of a year's worth of sales to China under calendar year 2020. So rather than being the $36.5 billion, I think we'll probably be, you know, in the $27 billion, give or take, range at the end of the year. Wow. What I am concerned about is this other parallel activity that's going on, and that is the Hong Kong situation, as you alluded to, the crackdown that is occurring there, what is going on the Indian border with China, and what seems to be just an escalation of this activity. We've already seen in the case of China now companies being asked that are exporting to China to sign documents saying that the product that they're shipping or the packaging that is part of that and the containers are free from COVID, even though there is zero scientific evidence evidence that you can transmit COVID via the product or the packaging. And that is not only just being asked of United States exporters, it's being asked of other principal exporters around the world. So you can kind of see these parallel tracks are may not be parallel that much longer.
Yeah, yeah. And I think what I hear you suggesting here is that if China doesn't like the way that the U.S. is responding to Hong Kong, all of a sudden there could be some artificial barriers erected based on COVID.
Well, put yourself in the shoes, Chip, of an exporter who, you know, wants the business with China and is being asked to sign a document that, very frankly, they know scientifically there's no proof that they're whatsoever by any organization of credibility that you can transfer or transmit COVID-19 via the product or the packaging. Yet you're being asked to do that in order to conduct business. And, you know, it's that kind of thing that I think causes a lot of pause. But that's just one peg. You know, the whole situation in Southeast Asia is a bit tenuous right now. And as we get closer to the election, the rhetoric is going to heat up, both both out of the Trump camp and the Biden camp. And both have to be tough on China and should be.
Should be. All right. 30 seconds. The Nats, the World Series defending champs, are they going to put a team on the field this year?
Yeah, we'll have a team on the field. The question is, will they stay healthy, number one? And number two, we've already seen Ryan Zimmerman opt out, not going to play this year. That might have to do as much with his contract situation as it does his concern about health. Plus, he's financially secure, Chip. He doesn't have to worry about it. Joe Ross, our fifth starter, is also opting out. I think this is a great opportunity to showcase some of the younger talent because they're expanding the roster, and we're loaded on the younger talent side. So I'm excited to get some normalcy back on baseball and the radio and TV. I can't watch the 1971 Orioles World Series rerun again.
Again.
I just can't do it again, Chip.
Randy, we got to go. Thank you so much. Really appreciate your time this morning.
America's Conservation Ag Movement would like to recognize American Farmland Trust for its efforts in contributing to healthier, more resilient production agriculture systems. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
All right, welcome back. The conversation with Randy there, mm-hmm. I want to make sure that everybody understands what we mean or what we were talking about when we were talking about the artificial trade barriers and the potential that China is attempting to construct some of those artificial barriers now with their demands that exporters sign a certificate that says, yeah, the product and the packaging that I'm sending you is free of the coronavirus. What could happen eventually if China doesn't like a comment from the White House or from the U.S. Trade Rep's office, mm-hmm. Doesn't like a comment from Congress?
Could we extend that from not just comments, but also perhaps naval military exercises in the South China Sea?
Yes, exactly. That all of the sudden, then mm-hmm. they could say, listen, unless you sign this saying that the product and the packaging is free of coronavirus, well, then we're not going to take it. So the exporter wants the business, but how could an exporter, despite all the evidence that there is no way that this will transmit the virus, how would an exporter take that risk and say, yeah, sure, I'll go ahead and sign that. And then, of course, you're paying to get the product there, and the product is there, and then all of a sudden, we're not going to take it because we now have evidence that the coronavirus was there and whatever. So it risky business, man. That's what we're talking about. That's what we're talking about here. And China has pulled these kind of hijinks in the past. Wouldn't mm-hmm. surprise anybody if they would do it again. So the auction that we were talking about with Machinery Pete.
Yeah.
46 states, 6 or 7 countries were mm-hmm. signed up as bidders. Bidders from 46 states. A year ago, I don't know if that would have happened. But because it's become the norm now to have these auctions online rather than mm-hmm. on site in Western Nebraska or on site in Central Illinois.
Yep.
Everyone has become so accustomed to using the online auctions now that you can sell 20 of those combines and you know, it works. You can sell 20 of the John Deere S680s and average $187,000. Mm-hmm. That kind of stuff just blows me away. That kind of stuff, Davis, is why the NASDAQ is making a new high again today.
It sure is. That's cool. The landowner for June just went out last week. I'm curious to see if there's a similar phenomenon that goes on there. Some companies, Farmers National, specifically mm-hmm. Randy Dickhoot, had talked about, you know, hey, look, we had some auctions, but it was stay in your pickup truck, bid from there.
Yeah.
There's a certain sense that if you're buying land, you want to get out there and get your boots in that dirt. You want to see the physical location. But if farmland does start to become one of those safe havens for people to put their money for a long-term investment.
Yep.
I don't know if we start to see, you know, those sorts of people who are more comfortable, you know, not necessarily your owner operators, but those who are more comfortable on the online environment as investors start to show up for the online components of these auctions. It could really change the way that farmland changes hands as well.
Yeah absolutely. You know? Absolutely. It is fascinating. The conversation with Brian Grady at the bottom of the hour and with Michael Clark at the start of the show talking about the weather, you could just feel it building over the weekend. I always check every afternoon. I check the National Weather Service 6 to 10 day and 8 to 14 day. Did you know that that I check that every day, Davis?
I had an inkling. Something felt like maybe that's what you were doing from day to day.
And you could see the heat spreading, and you could see the heat intensifying on the 6 to 10 day, on the 8 to 14 day, and you could see the area of below normal precipitation spreading. When you look at that forecast that we got yesterday afternoon for July 13th through the 19th, and it has below normal precipitation over 95% of the Corn Belt. It kind of makes you shudder.
Here in my own yard farm, and some of you on Twitter might have noticed, the sweet peas are out. I was standing in the garden and pulled some of those off. But I've also got, you remember the pepper plants, my coveted pepper plants that I was able to acquire. They're hanging bell peppers right now. And for the first time, I saw heat stress on those peppers. They're a little yellow, kind of whitish spot. And I had to Google it. I'd never seen such a thing before. It's what do they call it? Sunspot or something like that. And it's when it's too much heat, too much sun, too much on a pepper. For crying out loud, even the peppers are shrinking away from the heat, brother.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. And shrinking away from the heat, that is what I'm going to be doing this. I think I'm just going to stay in the basement. I'm just going to stay in the basement. It's nice and cool.
Yeah, attaboy.
Everything will be just fine. Everything will be just fine. One last thing from the conversation with Brian Grady. I did not mean to downplay the importance of that export demand. China was buying, yes, but when you look at what Mexico was doing, buying old crop corn, buying new crop corn and new crop corn shows how much value they think is in that
already this
right
week.
Now.
Yeah.
Already this week. Come back this afternoon. We got Dwayne Bussey from Bolt Marketing and Kerry Artak, Artak Advisory.